Welcome back to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn, and with me in the studio once again, the director of UNCW's Women's Studies and Resource Center, Katie Peel, is also an associate professor of English, and we're talking about Women's History Month, how gender equality issues and third wave feminism are expressing in our culture today. If you have a question for Dr. Peel or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. And we have an email I promised we'd get to after the break from Anne. She says, does Dr. Peel have a perspective about education salaries and historically female majority employees? As a retired North Carolina teacher, I believe that one of the reasons we can't seem to get teacher pay to come even close to other industry pay scale is that it is still viewed as women's work. Dr. Peel, what would you say to Anne?
Anne, I suspect you're right. And I don't want to get too much into that issue right now because North Carolina is kind of off the charts in terms of public teacher pay. We can, you know, Texas is recruiting our public teachers right now, so our public school teachers. But if we think about that, yeah, I mean, think about just looking at people who cook and who become chefs for a living, right, when it was not as valued, when it was primarily a woman's job. People didn't make a lot of money doing that, but now look at the celebrity chefs. Look at, you know, the names that we know and that are promoted, and you know all of our TV shows and whatnot. Those people are paid the big bucks, and it's a much more masculine profession these days.
And you were talking, Dr. Peel, earlier about negotiating and how. Yeah. Men are inclined to walk into a job offer situation and know that they need to negotiate. And you shared that when you were faced with that same circumstance, you felt as if you might be perceived as greedy. Caddy Kay of the BBC and Claire Shipman of ABC News, respectively, they wrote a book together about this documented gap in the confidence levels between men and women. And they happened upon this topic after they'd both interviewed female world leaders, politicians, scientists, notable women, and they found a similar thread, which to them was shocking enough to dive into the research and write a book about it. So let's listen to this clip.
And we kept coming across phrases like, I'm just lucky to have got there. I was just in the right place at the right time. And actually what we found was wells of self-doubt among women. And so we started to look into the research to see if there really was such a thing as a confidence gap between men and women. And the statistics were extraordinary. We talked about this earlier in the program. Men overestimate their abilities by 30% on average. Women tend to underestimate their abilities. There was a study done in the UK asking young graduate students, what do you deserve to earn 5 years out of college? The men would say, I think I deserve to earn $80,000. The women would say, I think I deserve to earn for $64,000. It's a 20% gap in what we feel we deserve.
A 20% gap in what women typically feel they deserve compared to the men that they're sitting next to in class and on the bus or the subway and in traffic. Where does that come from, Dr. Peel?
We're socialized that way, right? We learn confidence. We learn self-doubt. This is apparent too in kind of an alarming way. The way that we talk to babies, if we go to meet someone's new baby or whatever, it's entirely gendered, right? If it's a little boy, you know, it's, oh, you know, he's, first of all, it's, you know, very hetero, right? He's going to be a lady killer, you know, he's going to be so tough, so strong. And we use a lot of fighting rhetoric, right? If it's a female baby, you know, say, oh, she's so pretty, so dainty, so cute, you know, and we start projecting that stuff. So of course, you know, women are going to be to grow up and think that they need to be more modest, that it will be unseemly if they appear to be confident, right? They'll be knocked down. That the whole discussion of the word bossy, right? That's what that's all about.
Is there some truth to that? If a woman does present in public as a confident woman who is assertive with her ideas, will she be punished for that somehow?
Oh, sure. At the very least, just by other people's perceptions, right? But it can have more damaging consequences as well in terms of in the workforce, right? She might not be chosen for certain projects or promoted if she's seen as because bossy for women is seen as a negative thing, right? And you know, who wants to work with someone bossy as opposed to you know, reframing that as leadership qualities, you know, like, sure, I want to be on a team with a strong, you know, with a leader. So that can have very very real consequences.
You're listening to Coastline. We're talking with Dr. Katie Peel about Women's History Month and what we still have to learn, how the expression of gender equality is changing, and what role third wave feminism plays in all of this. If you have a question or a comment, give us a call at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. John from Wilmington, welcome to Coastline. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks. How are you?
I'm really enjoying this topic, and I really think this is probably the most important thing going on today, and maybe even a civil rights kind of aspect. But going to that, you know, vein, recently Patricia Arquette stood up at the, I guess it was the Grammys, Oscars, whatever, and criticized because she didn't frame this argument as an argument for all women, it seemed. You know, it's time to stop the civil rights movement, it almost sounded like, and let's focus on women's equality. And all the backlash that kind of happens within the feminist movement seems to almost hinder this beautiful thing that we see all over the place. Cinderella being criticized because you got to marry a wealthy man takes that Frozen thing that our daughters learned, my daughter learned, and wipes it all off the map instantly. And then the movie coming out now, right? So, and just understanding what third wave feminism is interesting to me because I really don't know.
Even in the media, Dr. Peel, especially in the media, we see some of these traditional images reinforced. And as John is talking about, I heard some people talk about Frozen and say it's really a lesbian love story here when it's actually, I think, about two sisters. But there had to be a sexual component introduced, in other words, because the woman at the end who is the hero is not rescued by a man. Is that... Why are we still encountering stereotypes like that? And what was this? He raised the issue of Patricia Arquette and the feminist backlash. Can you tell us about that? That was at the Oscars.
Right, sure. Well, there's a lot in there. Okay, so I'll try to be as organized as possible. In terms of just quickly Frozen, first of all, nothing wrong with a sister saving a sister, right? And I would encourage you, anyone who likes Frozen, please go read Goblin Market by Christina Rossetti. That's my little 19th century plug. So there's that. Patricia Arquette, my heart goes out to her because I do not deal well when asked questions on the spot. And, you know, when she had her prepared statements and gave the shout out for equal pay, that was a beautiful moment. And what I love even more, too, was the response by Meryl Streep and J-Lo, you know, saying, you know, right on. That was awesome. And then she was asked more questions, you know, behind the stage. And she, you know, she meant well. She was making a plug for gender equality. And the way it came off was that you know, that were these different factions and that it's everyone's turn. And she's being critiqued for not making her argument intersectional, right? Not realizing that we can all work together and that there are people who identify as, you know, as women of color, right? And, you know, and so the civil rights movement, you know, is necessarily and has to be, you know, this intersectional, you know, in meeting that it takes into account multiple identities movement. What tends to happen, though, is, you know, in this case with Patricia Arquette or, you know, Beyonce saying she's a feminist or whatever is, you know, it's great in that we get to have this conversation, right? It wrenches this conversation into mainstream media. And so we get to talk about this. But more often than not, it gets stuck on, ooh, I love Beyonce. No, I hate Beyonce, right? And so that's kind of where we leave it, and we don't pursue these conversations. But yay for getting this topic out there. And, I mean, you know, all of the social media was all over this for a little while after.
John, thanks so much for your call. USA Today just published a story about how all four military services are on track to open all military jobs to women by next year and expect rules for those changes to be in place by this fall. And that USA Today story was preceded by a piece on 60 Minutes over the weekend in which they were looking at the Marines and how there's a 3-month infantry officer course, and No women yet have been able to make it through the physical demands of that course. Every single woman that has attempted it has had to drop out. And despite that zero success rate, Brigadier General George Smith, the officer in charge of that program, tells the reporter, "The Marine Infantry Officer course is designed just right. There are no plans to change it." And this is an interesting point that he makes. He says the realities of combat aren't going to change based on gender. The enemy doesn't care whether you're male or female. Is this a gender equality issue, or is he right? I mean, doesn't it – you can make the argument that you need a certain level of defensive force, and why would you lower those standards? There are biological differences, are there not, between men and women?
To some extent, yes. And so I'm sure to some extent that this is a gender equality issue in terms of what we would look for is certainly access, right? It's about much more about access issues.
Yes. And certainly women in the military, that's been an issue because there's been something of a glass ceiling because women haven't been accepted and credited for having been in combat zones. That's been part of the issue. So it's been a rank issue. It's been a salary issue. But when you're talking just about the physical demands, where do we go with that from an equality issue?
That's a tricky question because certainly the demands of battle and war require a certain the ability to perform certain tasks, right? I don't know enough about military action to feel that I can make an informed statement about that. But I would be concerned about issues of access and education, and that's where I would leave that.
That's fair. There was a video. I want to make sure that we get to this. A video that went viral, and I think this was last year, produced by an organization called iHollaBack.org. You know what I'm talking about, Dr. Katie Peel. And this was a video that showed a young woman walking through the streets of New York City. She was wearing a crew neck T-shirt and jeans, you know, basically normal street clothes. And a camera followed her for 10 hours as she walked through the streets. She got a lot of male attention, people saying, hello, hey, baby, how you doing? You know, it was really when she didn't respond to people, one man said, hey, why wouldn't you thank somebody for telling you that you're beautiful? What is that? And why did that video go viral? Why did that capture the cultural and societal imagination so much? It struck such a nerve.
I think because so many people have experienced it. So many people could relate to it and have been bothered by it. And it's one of those things where it tends to happen to people when they are alone. I mean, sometimes it happens when people are in groups. But so it can feel isolating. It can feel like one is being targeted and victimized. And it's not something that one necessarily wants to broadcast, right? Or, you know, because it makes us feel bad or it can make us feel bad. So seeing that it happens to other people in such a blatant way is kind of this this rallying moment, right? And I think that's what made it so popular.
There was a response to that, a YouTube response, and I want to point out that this response is probably in the minority, but I don't think that it's so far from what a lot of people might privately think, which is why I think we should listen to this, and then I want to hear Dr. Katie Peel, your response. Here we go.
Apparently, when a woman goes out and deliberately wears tight jeans that are specifically designed to accentuate the shape of her ass to attract the opposite sex, and the jeans accomplish their intended goal of attracting the opposite sex, you're somehow a street harasser if you take the bait. And don't tell me, but she has to wear something. Yeah, she does, but let's be honest. She doesn't have to wear excessively tight jeans because jeans aren't the most comfortable clothing, especially when they're so tight that they cut the circulation to your legs. Excessively tight jeans serve a very deliberate function for women, attracting a sexual partner.
There are men that think women dress for that purpose. What would you say to that?
That's just plain victim blaming, right? Which is dangerous and damaging, you know, culturally for people of all genders, right? It's horrible to, you know, to blame the victim, regardless of gender, but that also gives these guys no credit at all. Really? You can't control yourself because of a pair of jeans? You know, what's that about? So yeah, that's ridiculous.
And this behavior is so prevalent because we've seen other catcall videos go viral. I mean, there was a video, I think, out of Brazil where it was all, you know, it was not in English, but there were helpful subtitles. And it was women who had been dressed up by makeup artists to parade in front of, in wigs and high heels and, you know, low-cut dresses, to parade in front of men who had been called sexual harassers, and these were their sons. And then the mother would walk by and the son would say something and the woman would turn around and say, "What are you doing?" And,
that's one of my favorites.
but obviously these videos keep popping up because this is so common all over the world. Right. What is there to be done about that?
Oh, goodness. Well, if you are looking for something to do, the Hollaback movement, and I'm blanking on her first name. Her last name is May. But
Emily May?
Emily May. Thank you. And she came to UNCW last year. She was part of this. But there's an app. There's an app for that. There's an iHollaback app, or you can go to iHollaback.com and report it. If you experience street harassment, you can report it, and it's a contribution to a map. So, again, this kind of awareness raising and consciousness raising. It's been going around and
finish your time.
Sorry. People are starting to work on comebacks, what to say back. And I love the commercial for the new Kimmy Schmidt show where she says, you know, "I wish I were your yellow hat," to the construction guy who catcalls. So we're working on it.
Okay. Dr. Katie Peel, thank you so much for joining us today. That's this edition of Coastline. Thanks also to you, our listeners, and those of you who called in and emailed your comments. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. Join us for the next Coastline. It's the Clothesline Muse. Grammy Award-winning singer Nina Freelon joins us to talk about her show Coming to Keenan and her residency at Williston Middle School, documenting history through art. That's next Wednesday at noon here on HQR News 91.3 FM. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.